U.S. Navy SEAL Chris Kyle's service during multiple combat tours in Iraq earned him 7 medals for bravery, including 2 Silver Stars. During his 10-year stint in the elite and mysterious SEALs, Chris Kyle was a sniper, and he was really good at it, recording the most career kills in U.S. military history. In his new memoir, which is now ranked number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list, American Sniper, Chris Kyle talks candidly about his years as a SEAL, his job as a sniper, and the pain of war. Welcome, Chris, to Two Boomer Babes.
Well, thank y'all for having me.
Nice to have you. So SEALs are known as silent warriors, and it's really rare that we civilians hear much about what goes on, let alone their identities. Although, lately, the SEALs have really been in the news quite a bit these days for their miraculous rescues. Did you get any flack for writing this book?
Initially, there was a little bit before people realized what was going on, but when they realized how the book was going to be written and who was actually being profiled in it, I've had nothing but support from the community.
Well, Chris, tell us a bit about your background. How did you get interested in joining the military, yet alone becoming one of the elite SEALs?
Well, I grew up being basically a cowboy, and I had 2 dreams as I was growing up. I wanted to be, a cowboy, and I wanted to be in the military. I wanted to be a Marine, but when I went to enlist, I went to the recruiter's office, and the Marine recruiter was out to lunch. And then there in that strip mall, all the other recruiters started coming out and talking to me, and the Navy, they're the ones that won.
Wow. Talk about fate.
Yeah.
So how does one become a sniper? I mean, is there a school for that in the military?
Yes, ma'am, there is. Each branch has their own sniper school. In fact, we used to send our guys to Marine Sniper School, and then we took from their training and developed our own, because SEAL snipers have more weapon systems than Marine snipers, so it had to lengthen the course, but then we also involved other techniques that we thought a sniper should be able to employ.
Now, Chris, you've actually been credited with 160 confirmed sniper kills, the most in U.S. military history. Can you explain exactly what that means?
Well, every time we would go out and I would take a shot on somebody, it was documented in something that was called a shooter statement, to where it was extremely detailed. I had to have the time of day, the distance from the guy, what he was wearing, what he was doing, what he was carrying, and my position on the map to him, all the way down to the grain of the caliber I shot him with, and then it had to be signed by a witness that was there to see it.
I honestly cannot imagine what it's like to shoot someone, and what goes through your mind? Do you think of your targets as human beings, or are they just merely targets?
No, ma'am, they're just, I mean, I think of them as the enemy, because the whole reason I am shooting them, they are trying to actively kill, maim, or injure my fellow Americans, our allies, or the innocent Iraqi people on the ground. So I am there just trying to save lives, but unfortunately for me to save a life, that means I have to take someone else's.
Okay, so let me ask you, when you're on sniper duty, how do you know with some certainty that someone is a threat? I mean, are you told about people beforehand or groups of people, or are you continually scanning the crowds? How do you pick a target?
Most of my jobs I was sent out on, I would go into an area that was heavily contested, and I would set up. I would get there early, set up, so I could find out the area, kind of get to know it a little bit. And then we also had cultural debriefs on what to expect out there. So that way, when someone was acting out of the ordinary, it made it easier for me to pick them out. But then I'm also looking for key things as far as, are they angry? Are they carrying weapons? You know, what are my rules of engagement? And then it's really easy whenever they are actively engaging in the Americans.
Right. Now, do you have to get permission from a superior to take the shot?
No, ma'am. That is that discretion is given to me, but also at the same time, that means if I make a bad call, I'm the one who gets in trouble for it.
Well, Chris, your first kill was a woman with a grenade in Nasiriyah, but you didn't kill a child in Sadr City who had an RPG launcher. So do you have a line in the sand in your head somewhere that you just won't cross?
No, ma'am. I mean, as far as the woman, she had already pulled the pin. She was actively walking towards the Marines, acting as she was trying to greet them, and they were going to let her come into their inner circle to where she was going to basically be a suicide bomber. As far as the kid, in that other scenario, he was sent out to pick up an RPG, which he wasn't going to use it on us, but he was taking it back to give to somebody else. But I just could not find it in me to take him out because I knew he was not the one who was going to use it on us.
This is Barbara Cathy, the Two Boomer Babes, and we are speaking with Navy SEAL Chris Kyle about his new memoir, American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history.
Well, Chris, apparently you were so good at your job that the Iraqi insurgents named you Al-Shaitan, the devil, and placed a bounty on your head. How did you learn of this?
Our intel, they were finding bits and pieces, and they started giving us the information as far as I had been targeted now. They did not know what my face looked like, but they were identifying me by a tattoo I have on my arm. So they had it out there, but also the bounty was at that time for all snipers in the area.
Now, you served four tours in Iraq, and then you'd come home to your wife and kids during leave. But that really must have been very schizophrenic for you. How did you maintain a sense of normality when your job is a sniper in Iraq, and then you're home in the U.S. playing ball with your kids?
Well, it's definitely, you become two different people. You know when to turn it off, when to turn it off. When you get on that plane and you head overseas, you know you're going there for a job. It's just like the football players. They know when it's time to turn it on, you know, put their game faces on. And then when the game's over, they go in the locker room. Now they're just regular, average, everyday guys.
Well, did your wife and family, did they know about your job? Did they know what you did?
They knew kind of broad strokes. I never really told my wife a whole lot about what I did. You know, some of it being operational security, not allowed to tell her, but some of it too, I did not want to scare her and have her worrying about me more than I thought she needed to.
Well, Chris, you've written that you actually liked being a sniper and that it was actually fun, you've said in your book. And, you know, I would guess your words are difficult for many people to fathom. So how do you rationalize that statement?
Because I felt I was out there actually saving people. I was allowing Americans to be able to come home. It is nice to be able to see that you're having a direct effect on the war. And when you see the morale of the guys raise because they know you're up there, they feel protected. Yes, I loved that. I loved being able to help them and have some positive effect while I was out there.
Well, and Chris, during your SEAL days, we understand that you were actually shot on twice and in numerous IED explosions, and you also lost a couple of your best friends. And we all hear about soldiers killed every day on the news. But do you think somehow that Americans are desensitized to what is happening in the Middle East and the horrors of war?
Well, I think it's gotten to be such commonplace on the news. You see the ticker tape at the bottom says, you know, three more troops died today, to where they're not associating names with it anymore. Now it's just numbers because people have become desensitized to it. They see it all the time. So that was one point about this book, is I'm trying to raise the awareness for these troops because these are people, they have mothers, fathers, they could have wives or husbands and children of their own, but I mean, these are your next door neighbors. These are people out there, regular average Americans, who are willing to go overseas and put their life on the line to fight for us. And they don't have to believe in the politics of the war or whether it's right or wrong, we should be there or not. They just decided to do something for the greater good and serve this country.
Well, after 10 years in the Navy and the SEALs, you decided not to reenlist. So why was that, Chris?
With me personally, I gave 100% to my job and was not given my all to my family. And, you know, the last 3 years I was in, I spent 6 months at home out of the past 3 years. So we were already having marital problems, and my wife had already basically given me an ultimatum that if I deployed again, she was not going to be there when I got home. So I decided to get out, rearrange my ideals and goals in life, and give everything to my family.
Well, Chris, finally, now that you're retired from the SEALs and you've really had time to reflect on your years as a sniper, do you have any regrets? You know, do you have a clear conscience?
I do have a clear conscience. I do have regrets. My regrets are those people I could not save, because now I feel like I failed them. But they're the only things that bother me at night. All the people I killed, they do not bother me, because I know what I was out there doing was the right thing.
Well, Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, author of a new memoir, American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history, and it just happens to be number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Thanks so much for joining the Two Boomer Babes.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it.
You are listening to Two Boomer Babes.